If this is your first time listening, welcome. My name is Caro Solano, and you'll hear my voice along with immigration attorney Fiona McEntee with our very special guest, Stephanie O'Quigley.
Never thought when I jumped on my J1 that I would be on an immigration podcast.
I mean, what an incredible journey you've had. I mean, I obviously know you personally, and I've been on your podcast, and now the tables have turned, so we're really grateful for you for coming on. But one of the things that just strikes me so much about you is just how generous you are with your time and with your advice to people that follow you. And I just think you're such a role model for so many people. And so it's a real honor to have you on.
Oh, thank you. That's so nice.
It's so amazing to see young faces being representations for others. Like, that fills me with a lot of good feelings.
Thank you. That motivates me more than the dollar bill. So yeah.
That helps too.
Yeah, but getting satisfaction from, you know, just because it obviously takes so much time to put out information, and you know, it's a lot of effort too. But you mentioned your J1s. You did first come to the US on a J1, right?
Yeah, the J1 trainee program, I don't know if it still exists right now. Yeah. But that's what it was called at the time. So I was lucky. I was one of the luckier ones that had the 18 months as opposed to the 12 months, which, you know, is still nothing really, you know, in the grand scheme of things. But it's an amazing head start, you know. Mm.
Yeah. And did you, I mean, were you determined that you were going to go to New York, or is that kind of where you always wanted to be when you thought of coming to America?
Yeah. It was, and oftentimes I don't practice manifestation, but and oftentimes when I look back, the things that play out have been in my head very specifically for a long period of time. Ever since, I think my initial like real grow for New York was like Home Alone 2, like when he got lost in New York.
New York.
Love it. I've just watched that a million times with my kids over Christmas. It's a great movie though, and it's such a Christmas in New York. I mean, there's probably no better time to like picture New York than Christmas time.
I was lucky enough as well to be able to travel to New York a couple of times for kind of longer stints, you know, like a couple of weeks at a time before I made the move. Not that I ever really thought it would come true, but I was able to kind of have a taste of the city before I actually like made the full move over. So yeah, for me it was always the US, and then it was always New York. So so many people said, you know, it's easier to get a visa for London and Canada, you know, and all these places, and I was very close to kind of considering it, but you know, something holds you back, you know, and you're glad then you persisted to kind of find the route that you want.
Yeah, you don't strike me as somebody that picks the easy route.
Hard one.
And it hasn't been easy, right? I mean, so you were here in your J1 and obviously fell in love with New York and with America. And then did you kind of almost instantly decide that you wanted more after arriving?
No, I think at the very beginning, it was very tough in ways that you could never have prepared for. And I think a lot of that is just kind of being a human being, adapting to like a new environment and everything. So there's a lot of stuff that kind of I feel like you're constantly battling, especially because I came over when I had 4 years experience in my career. Like I wasn't fresh out of college. So I kind of had a grasp on work life, like the 9 to 5, like I had worked a very big and serious job at the time before I came, and I did a good four-year stint in that. So I kind of had my wits about me. I was already in the workspace, and kind of coming over in the J1, you know, with that experience under my belt, kind of made it, I had to take it seriously, because this wasn't a college after college experience. And it was more of, I have a job, you know, I had a job set up for me here, you know, I was getting paid more money. And, you know, I did a job that was very media focused. I was kind of had a lot of, you know, people knew about my job prior to moving to America. So I kind of had this little bit of a standard to like uphold, you know.
Yeah.
There was a lot of pressures in that sense. But I think when, I think maybe after the year, there was nothing that pulled me back to Ireland. And that's kind of how I made the decision to kind of go for it, you know, and to consider the O1.
And I know one of the articles was from the Irish Times, how Irish influencers, you know, I know that term is kind of bandied about a bit, are securing extraordinary ability visas, the O1s for the US. And the subheading was Instagrammers and YouTubers are getting O1 visas, usually for high achievers in sports or arts. And I thought that was kind of an interesting subheading, because the O1 can be for any field. And I mean, it's just that there's new emerging fields that are coming out that weren't really contemplated when the O1 was written back in the 90s. And one of the stats in this article was that 2,300, around that 2,300 Irish have secured an O1 since then. And you are one of those. Can you tell us a little bit about how kind of daunting that experience was with the O1, and kind of what that process was like for you?
It wasn't daunting per se, because I had been so happy and I had so much happen to me in the first year and a half in New York that I wasn't banking on much more. Like, I kind of, everything on top of that was, you know, going to be a bonus for me. And I knew that I'd come to New York for growth and for expansion and to learn things. And I had done that times 100 in my first year and a half because of all the kind of challenges I came up against. So I think I was more unsure, unclear, like, let's just go for a kind of thing, and if it works out, it works out. I think the second time around, for my second O1, was a little bit more of a, you know, more pressure and stuff, because I knew my heart that I wanted to stay. I had, you know, a great work lined up for myself that I really wanted. I suppose I was given the option with my work that they needed me at the time, you know, and when we went to consider different routes, and the lawyer at the time told me that the O1 was the best fit for me. I'd never heard of it. Like, it's like people, it's kind of like, I call it the Wild West of visas. Like, it's just people. Yeah. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, and Carolina has worked on O1s with us, so, you know, in the firm. So
I very, very much appreciate the analogy of the Wild Wild West.
Yeah, which was wilder over the past 4 years than we've ever seen before. So you were kind of thinking with your first one, look, if it works out, it works out. But by the time you came around to applying for your second one, so did you do 3 years on the first one, or how long into the O1 did you apply for your second one?
So, no, I have two right now.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Concurrently.
Yeah. So I have my other one, I think I was 2.5 years in. So I have another couple of months left on it. So, yeah, it was kind of 2.5 years in, I think. Just going, you know, obviously, if anybody's listening to this, they might know the details of it, but just having a petitioner versus, you know, having an agent versus all the different types of work that you can get on the O1, that's the reason what had made me change the visa. Otherwise, I would have saw it through, but I had different work kind of calling my name. You know, when you get the O1, like, you're kind of, I was in a more serious position as well in my job, and I just kind of really had to prove myself. Like, and I feel like I wrote this in a blog post before. It's like, you know, immigrants, we have to really prove our worth to kind of, especially with the O1, to prove that we're, you know, worthy of the job. And maybe that's not the way it should be, but I think there is that general feeling across immigrants that we have to prove our worth to stay and prove that we're a valuable employee, just like, you know, maybe somebody who's an American citizen. So I definitely felt that pressure, and maybe that's not right of me, but I just naturally felt that pressure as an immigrant. So I worked like 300% more than anybody around me. And I just kind of gave it my everything and made myself somebody that the team couldn't lose. And it was that case, you know, I mean, I felt like I really was a strong part of the team towards the end. And, you know, after doing all that work and putting myself so far into like the job, into my career over here, into like building connections, like I went like 110% on everything that I had so much on the line. I just didn't want to give it up, you know.
And that really comes across in you're such a hard worker. And I think that is just, it radiates out of you. I'm sure your family are so proud of you, but it's not easy. It's not an easy visa to get. It's not an easy visa to get the second time around. And it had become a lot harder under the Trump administration, because there in the past, it wasn't like, because you got 101, you're always going to get a second. But there was a kind of an understanding of, if you'd proven that you were extraordinary in the past, that like, aren't you still, you know, are they going to at least come from a place of appreciating that you're likely still extraordinary if you were 2 years ago? But that all kind of went out the window. And I think, you know, just the pressure that immigrants have been feeling over the past few years. I mean, how has that impacted you as far as like just feeling that kind of general sense of like anxiety and stress?
I moved here in 2016 on November the 5th. So I had,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I remember waking up that morning and it was raining in New York. I'm sure every New Yorker remembers.
Oh, there's this one thing. If you're waking up from a coma, bad timing, first of all. Donald Trump has been sworn in as president of the United States.
Yeah. But obviously, I think I didn't understand at the time what it meant. And I didn't really feel the pressure till about a year and a half in, when I was thinking more long term about my life in America. But I think, to answer your question, particularly in the last year, has been, you know, really, really horrible for immigrants. Yeah. Just speaking personally, it's, you know, it's made me sick to my stomach, and I wouldn't say that lightly, but it's just made me sick. It's made me feel like I'm so unwanted.
Yeah.
You know, that it's like we have these visa programs and we have these visa, you know, that you can apply for, but we're going to do everything in our power to make sure you don't get approved, or to make sure you don't enjoy your time or the process or anything, you know. And it's like, even right now with the O-1 restrictions up to this point, with the stamp and the embassies being closed, it's just, I've sacrificed so much to be on this visa, like so much. And my family have sacrificed so much to be on this visa. That's all down to a lot of the, you know, the changes that the administration has made in the past 4 years, you know, and it just seems like a constant attack. So I think it all kind of was like, towards the end of 2020 and up till, you know, January 20th, it was all just like coming on top of us, all these changes. You know, you're shaking, you're watching your phone for updates and waiting to hear something that can change your life, really, you know. So it's been horrible. And I know I speak for a lot of people when I say that, because I've had this conversation so many times. I think unless you're an immigrant, do you understand how it actually really feels, you know, or a family of an immigrant?
And those feelings are absolutely valid. Earlier, you were mentioning whether or not you think it's wrong of you to feel that, you know, this is how you're feeling. It's absolutely valid, because not only are we adding all of these loops and all of these steps and obstacles to let individuals like you make our country better and contribute to our society and our economy and all of these things, but then we're not changing the narrative in the public eye. Individuals that I've spoken to who don't work in immigration or are not immigrants or daughters or sons of immigrants, they don't understand that these processes are, as you said, grueling. I mean, it's like pulling teeth. You have to, it's the Wild Wild West out there. And a lot of the times the public doesn't see that. they simply think like everyone's coming here and taking our jobs and all this and the other, and they don't realize just how many obstacles and just how difficult it is to get to this country, to have a job in this country, to make money here. And at the end of the day, you still feel unwanted. It is absolutely a frustrating feeling that I'm hoping, given the trauma collectively that we have experienced in the last 4 years, that we will move towards a more humanized form of when we talk about immigrants, a more human perspective. We need to make sure that the stories are told by the individuals who are living them, and not by the media, and not by politicians, and certainly not by politicians that hate immigrants. There's no other way to put it.
Yes.
But it's, I mean, I don't want to put it lightly. Yes, they have a distaste for, you know, job market. No, they
hate immigrants. Say it. Say it. Yeah. But Stephanie, that's, I mean, so I'm a US citizen now, but I mean, I feel your pain and I've seen it, like, and it's actually, I'm going to start crying now because I can see your Instagram stories and I know how hard it is to not be able to like travel. I can travel, but I, you know, with my parents being at home, they can't travel. They're part of the ban. They're, you know, and it's been such a tough year to be separated from family. And I think we should be so lucky to have immigrants like you in this country. And you are enriching, you know, in all your work, but you're just like such a breath of like positivity and wellness and like just advocating for, you know, all those things that we should be like self-care and genuinely, sincerely doing that. We should be so lucky to have people like you here. And instead of like, you know, constantly raising the bar and changing the game when you're in the middle of like playing. And with that last travel ban, I mean, I feel like there was he on his way out the door, you know, putting immigrants as pawns in a vicious game that like, you know, ending a policy that he wasn't even going to be in office to end. And then, oh God.
As he was walking, as he was getting his butt kicked out the door, he was like signing executive. Like the whole thing was performative.
And yeah.
Violence. I mean, I know I'm very hyperbolic sometimes when I use words, but it is very violent of him to do those actions because the fact that it is performative, I think makes it even worse.
Disgusting.
It's a psychological abusive tactic that just, like you said, Stephanie, it makes you sick. It does make you viscerally sick. What's unfortunate is, much like human nature, a lot of us don't learn until we either see it for ourselves or are told these stories from individuals that we know and we feel their pain. But a lot of it is also you need to be empathetic. You need to also be willing to feel that pain instead of not thinking about it. You know, we have this hashtag. I know that it's just a hashtag, but it's very impactful. It's don't look away. And I know that a lot of immigration advocates have used this hashtag because it's very easy for us to kind of look away from the bad things when they're not happening to you. So it is important to talk about that because individuals like you, there's millions out there that are collectively experiencing this abuse and this trauma. And as Fiona said, being used like pawns.
Yeah. I think like it's hard for somebody to imagine what it feels like to know that you can get banned at any point, you know, or to be separated from your family at any moment. Or even on the flip side, waiting now where I'm kind of thinking, you know, where Trump, he lifted the travel ban and within minutes, you know, the Biden administration put out, you know, different viewpoints on it. But it's just you're like in limbo. So your life is not really in your own hands. And it's so hard for somebody like who's a citizen or, you know, who's not an immigrant to understand what that feels like for a year, like specifically more intense for a year.
Yeah. Hopefully that is long gone and we will never go back there again. But I do feel like having these conversations, people can see the pain of what those types of policies and that rhetoric does to people.
Yeah. And I will go as far as to say that it is traumatic. It is something traumatic to live through, especially with the intensity it has been throughout 2020.
Nevertheless, she persisted and thrived.
As an extraordinary immigrant with 201 visas, Stephanie has her dream job, which she'll tell you about a little later, and also runs an award-winning health, wellness, and lifestyle podcast, The Wall, by Stephanie O'Quigley.
Isn't it like one of the top health and wellness podcasts in the Irish charts?
Yeah, it was number 2 for a while. So the charts change a lot, but you can actually say technically that you're once you hit that number, you can say that you're.
That's amazing! Congratulations!
Thank you.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, as you know, it's a lot of work, but it's such a passion project. You know.
Yeah, and so how long has it been running now?
So we're heading into season 3. When I say we, I mean me, because
you.
I don't
you. Yeah, you do the royal. You do everything yourself for the show.
Yeah, so I'm a bit nifty with computers and like that kind of stuff doesn't bother me. It's kind of more like the planning and the time, just to allocate the time that goes into it. But we're jumping into season 3, which is very exciting and crazy to think that I have, you know, 3 seasons under my belt.
Wow.
You know, I'm very passionate about how humans behave and why people do what they do. And I think I've kind of narrowed it down more into kind of curious conversations around human behavior and health. So that kind of covers more about psychology and wellness and kind of more human behavior focused. It's, you know, we talk a lot about, we had a dating expert on, she's like a relationship psychologist. So we kind of talked about different needs and like traumas in relationships and what that means. And then we had a trauma specialist on to talk about, you know, how trauma can evolve later in your life from childhood and what that looks like. My mom's also a therapist who specializes in anxiety. So I had her on.
I'm so happy you brought up your mom. I really wanted to ask you about your mom from like seeing her. So yeah, tell me more. Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted a fangirl over your mother.
Everybody thinks, you know, everybody feels so strongly about their mother, and everyone thinks their mother is special. And I do obviously feel like my mother is special, but she has, she gets a lot of feedback on when people meet her about, you know, they leave a kind of a certain impression. She leaves a certain impression on people. And she's the most content person you will ever meet. She's so, you know, content in herself and in her soul and in her being and everything else. And I think it just radiates from her, you know, she doesn't need for anything or want for anything. And she's just very, you know, with all the work that she's done on herself, just kind of that type of person. So I think a lot of how I've been able to survive 2020 and, you know, develop a podcast around all this comes from a lot of the stuff that she's taught me along the way, and listening to her and just having her as my best friend, you know, has kind of evolved into this. So I know she's my mother, but I kind of see her in 2 different parts. I see her the way people react to her, and also obviously as my mom as well.
But like, to call someone content, I mean, I think that's probably one of the most beautiful ways to describe somebody, because it, you know, and you kind of can visualize just the serene and the, you know, peacefulness of them and the comfort in their own skin, and like, wow. And was your mom was she a therapist when you were growing up, or did she do that later on, or has she always been a therapist?
Yeah, so my mom, and I know she won't mind me saying this, but my mom never went to college. I think she did the leave and cert, I'm not too sure. She's going to laugh at that, but I'm saying that because I want people to know that it doesn't really matter.
My mum's the same. She never went to college either. Yeah.
Yeah. She's from Dublin and she worked in the city, and she only ever wanted to be a housewife and have kids. And that's what she did. And then I think when she got older, so when we were 18, she went back to college and she was able to study and become, but she was kind of a therapist. She just wasn't getting paid for it.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that's so cool that, you know, that she's like, now's my time to go and do my thing. And she's really, obviously, what a perfect career for her.
Yeah.
And so another thing I wanted to talk to you about is your new job that you're doing with Spotlight, who, and I don't know if you know this, but they are a client of ours.
I didn't know that. Let's just be clear.
Yeah, working with them over the past like year or two. But I told them that you were coming on the show, and I asked them, would we have permission to mention that they were clients of ours, and that we were talking to you, could we talk about them? They were like, absolutely. I'd love to give you an opportunity to share with us some of the work that you're doing with Spotlight.
Yeah, I mean, just, I suppose, you know, I didn't want to touch on it too much earlier when you asked me the question, but one of the reasons why there was so much on the line is because my dream job would be this position at Spotlight, you know, oral care.
Yay.
And that's probably what made it so emotional for me, you know, at the time. And just to give you context, like, my visa got granted in October, and it's January, so just, you know, I'm only 4 months in, so it's so much different parts of my work coming together into one, and it's, you know, been acquaintances or, you know, friends of Lisa and Vanessa, and who are both Irish sisters, the founder of Spotlight Oral Care, for years and years and years, and, you know, working to kind of raise awareness about Irish companies in America, and just kind of being an advocate of Irish in America, and, you know, getting involved in that community. And then obviously I've been a publicist for almost 10 years, and working on the beauty side of things. So it's kind of so many different things coming together that just made it for me the perfect opportunity to, as their PR manager. And I know with the O1, you know, proving that you are, you know, specific for this role, having Irish experience, having European experience with so many European brands, and then having such a great experience over here in the US from the previous O1 just helped me, you know, shape myself into the perfect person for this position. Just having that kind of universal experience. So it was just so exciting for me to kind of pull all that together. And, you know, I had a conversation with my mother and I said, oh my God, like, this is so perfect. And it's just everything that, you know, I've been working towards. So we launched in the US, obviously an oral care brand last year. So very fresh, and obviously 2020 wasn't a great year to kind of get started, but we've been working
in retail as well, because they're right.
Yeah.
And online, but yeah, the retail part was huge, I think.
Yeah. So, and you know, just working towards kind of getting that brand awareness in the US has been kind of a main priority for us. But we're available in Ulta, Target, and CVS, and maybe one or two, you know, Irish brands in Ulta and CVS.
So exciting.
Yeah, it's just so proud to see these, you know, these mass market. And, you know, when I heard that we're in CVS, Ulta, Target, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is what beauty brands dream of, you know. And we're straight out the gate, you know, it's amazing to see that in the US.
For me, when I moved here years and years ago, first in 2002, and just going to Target, like, to get, you know, whatever, bed clothes, something
You don't tell Target what you need. Target tells you what
you need. And now they're telling us that we need Spotlight oral care products. Got toothbrushes, everything else. Yeah, whitening, all this, you know, everything. But it is such a moment of pride to see an Irish company, especially like a female owned and kind of run and led like Irish company. And they're dentists themselves and developed this product by seeing kind of a gap in the market for something that they thought could be sustainable and like less damaging for your teeth and all that kind of stuff. And so I share your pride in just that like success of theirs, and I can't wait to see what happens next with them.
We have a lot of work ahead of us, and we have a great team. We have, you know, great products. We're vegan, cruelty free, sustainable, and non-toxic kind of oral care solutions, which is obviously very fitting for the market right now. So we've a lot of work ahead, but I'm just so excited to be working for an Irish company, you know, at this level in the US, and so proud to be representing, you know, a company and two people that I followed for so many years. So
I couldn't think of a more perfect fit to be doing their I could not think of a better fit than you. And I was so excited when I saw that, and I was like, they're clients of ours, like, this is just so perfect.
thank you to Stephanie O'Quigley for joining us and to her inspirational team at Spotlight Oral Care. Follow them on social media to learn more about this amazing women immigrant founded company and their clean and sustainable dental care products. And if you want to find out more about the extraordinary O-1 visa, be sure to follow Fiona on Facebook and Twitter at US Visa Lawyer. And thank you to the amazing dream team of Alva Fitzpatrick and Ignacio Sass for writing and producing our theme song. We have a few more episodes left to share with you, so stay tuned.